This episode of The Disciplined Investor is brought to you by Masterworks. Visit masterworks.io for more information.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of The Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company. From seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets move up and over the 50-day moving averages. Watching one forgotten sector now that's on the rise. Earnings season starts this week. We're looking at the polls and pundits, both of which are usually wrong. All this and much more on episode number 683 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. What a week it was. How you doing out there? Seems like forever we had our last show. It's just a week ago, you know. First, a quick hello. Tell you, hey, I'm Andrew Horowitz, and I'm the president of Horowitz & Company. Of course, I'm the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. So thank you so much for spending your time with me, with our guests that we have each and every week. And I was thinking about last week's guest. And what we talked about, some of the concepts and topics we talked about, and that was with Dr. Richard Smith. And we talked about the issue of social media, the idea of surveillance capitalism, and how social media has their hands in our pockets. We talked about how we are the product of social media. If you're wondering, what's the product? And you have no idea, then you and I, we all are the product. And that's kind of what we focused in on. And it was interesting because it's probably no surprise anymore to anybody what social media is and what it's not. But I think we hit a bit of a nerve because there was a lot of emails and comments that came in. And I think that a lot of people maybe that were on the edge of thinking that, you know, well, social media provides a service and it provides the ability to track birthdays and see all my high school friends and college friends. And, well, what is the big deal about me putting on there everywhere that I go and what I do and where I eat and what I say and my comments, my thoughts, my family? And I think a lot of people are starting to get the hint that social media can create a lot of damage in ways that were unsuspected for a long period of time. You know, the idea that, okay, they're kind of tracking us a little bit. All right, who cares? It's free. And maybe the idea that, you know, how bad is this for society? I don't know. I'm just putting on my bits of information. But the problem with the bad actors, the misinformation, like anything else, it's become a very dangerous thing in the wrong hands. And while some of the platforms are trying their best to clean up these bad actors that spread this misinformation on a regular basis, as that's their goal. That's their job. That's what they do. And we've known about this for years. It appears that as they take down each and every bad actor, another one pops up. It's a never-ending game of cat and mouse. You know, it's as soon as they come up, they get taken down. Let's say they get, unfortunately, brought back up in a different wrapper, and there's no way to really keep on top of this. And the problem is that for those who thought that it was a safe environment to get information that was just kind of, you know, benign, where they saw some news and maybe some ads for products, maybe even saw certain things pop to the top. That's what these algos are all about. And last week with Richard Smith, Dr. Richard Smith, we talked about the algos. And we talked in particular about TikTok. Because if you think about it, it's just kind of movies and skits. and little vignettes. And what could be the harm? Well, maybe there's nothing. But the algos know what to put in front of you on a regular basis. This is something that was known for a long time to a lot of people. It was uncovered again in the movie The Social Dilemma. Again, some things that we talked about. I want you to listen to, if you haven't done so already, episode number 682, which was last week with Dr. Richard Smith. And I think you'll get a lot out of that. All right, a couple of things I want to go through this week because it was kind of an interesting week where we saw markets up about 4%. That was large caps, you know, the S&P 500, the NASDAQ 100, the Russell 1000. These were up about 4% for the week, which by all accounts is a great week, right? I mean, 4% for a stock market in any week is great. I mean, you double that, you got 8%. And if you do that in 2 weeks, that's the average the stock market makes over time on an annual basis. So not too bad of a week. Obviously coming on the heels of some downstrokes that we saw in previous weeks that took about a 7 or 8% move from the top of the market last month down to where it was. And there was a lot of different things that were really pushing and pulling markets. But did you see? I think it was probably one of the most forgotten sectors for a while. And that was the 8% rise for some areas like the small caps. Now, the small cap universe itself was up about 6%, but if you kind of split it out and you look at some value, you look at some other small caps, kind of, you know, anywhere from 6 to 9%, depending on what specific small cap index you're looking at. Not bad. Month to date, up about 9% also. Still down for the year slightly, but an impressive run out of pretty much nowhere. We're talking about the beginning of, the end of last month into the beginning of this month is where small caps start to run. And you know, why? And I think that it has to do with the idea that the stimulus, back to this discussion, the fiscal stimulus, which is being pushed forth, and there's been a pounding of the table about the need for fiscal stimulus from the government into the hands of individuals, small companies, companies in general, into flooding it into the economy pretty much directly. It's like a direct line into the artery of stimulus. And by the Fed pushing it, by the Democrats calling for, what, $2.2 trillion? Only $2.2 trillion on top of what we've had. The White House, the Republicans saying, no, I don't think so. But yet there is, I think, there is a general notion that this is going to get done, that there will be a stimulus plan, whether it's this week, next week, 4 weeks from now, 6 weeks from now, the end of the year. Sometime in the near future, there's going to be a stimulus plan that is going to be a direct benefit for many small companies. And that's why we're finally seeing that nice move up where there was kind of a consolidation for a bit of a time. So this push and pull with the stimulus is kind of favoring the idea that, yeah, there's going to be something and small caps are starting to move. Now, let's just dig into this for a second because we've talked about stimulus. And, you know, why do we spend so much time talking about the Fed or stimulus? Because these are major drivers for markets, not only domestically, but internationally, because we're not the only country that is providing these incredible levels of stimulus. We're seeing that this is happening on a global basis, all sparked from the same basic reason that, of course, it's because we have a pandemic that is breaking the back of economies, and therefore we need to have some sort of relief. And where do you get that from? Well, it's going to be the government. Now, let's not even talk about paying it back. Let's not talk about how this really puts a crimp on future growth. Let's just talk about the fact that this is happening, and this is something that needs to be put into the calculus when we're dealing with our investments. So when we talk about what's gone on, I'm not exactly sure where to start. Because over the last several weeks, we have a variety of different machinations that's going on here. I mean, we have the Democrats that are not giving in, that says, you know, we want $2.2 trillion and that's it. That's all there is. We're not giving in. We have the leverage. We are not going to do anything here besides hold our line. And the Republicans came in with, okay, listen, we're going to do something like $1.3 trillion. You know, there was first $500 billion. That was kind of pushed aside. We're not going above 1.2, 1.5, then 1.6. Now, as of last week, we're at 1.8. Now, let's back that up for a second. Because last week, we also had President Trump stopping all negotiations until after the election. And then a day later, after the market crumbled 2% from its high during the day, maybe we need to do something. Mitch McConnell says, hey, you know what? Nothing is going to be done before the election. But then negotiations were back on with Mnuchin and Pelosi. Or are they off again? I don't know. I mean, somewhere, it's basically impossible to keep up with. But what's really kind of interesting is I started thinking about this, and what's the purpose of this public debate that we're seeing play out on Twitter, that we're seeing play out in the nightly news? Why is it that we have to have this all so front and center when, in fact, nobody in the process seems to know what anybody else in the process is doing? Am I kidding? I mean, really, when we have somebody saying, hey, stop the negotiations, somebody else saying this is not going to happen until after the election, then somebody else saying, you know what, okay, let's kind of up our ante here and go up a couple of billion dollars up into the closer to the $2.2 trillion level, well, maybe there's a lack of communication going on. Now, in all fairness, President Trump was on a lot of drugs last week, right? We know that. He was on experimental drugs for the COVID, for the treatment. He was on a massive dose of steroids. Maybe I'm just saying a little suggestion. That's not the time that we need to be really publicly debating a massive stimulus program. Maybe there's a little lack of clear-headed thinking. Or maybe it sharpened him up. I don't know. Either way, the fact is that this is the kind of thing that we've seen before. And where was that? Where was it that we had this kind of back and forth, on and off? It's going to be smaller. It's going to be larger. The deal is the greatest. Oh, it's a terrible deal. You know what? We're walking away from this. Forget it. Do you remember where this was? The China deal. You know, the skinny partial phase one trade deal that we went to, and we had this back and forth and forth and back, a concession, an agreement. We were going to sign something, but we wanted more for the farmers. We wanted more for this. It was touted as the greatest deal for months, but then during the negotiations, what happened? We walked away. We came back. Markets were up. Markets were down. Every breath of what was going on seeming to be, okay, well, that's what's going to happen. Nope, change. Here we go. We're changing it entirely, and we're doing something different. It seems to be a pattern. And if you remember, maybe the reason why we're seeing the same kind of pattern emerge with a bit of a different end product is because it worked so beautifully. The idea of telling people it's not happening. And who knows, maybe the short sellers got really on board with that. Then they said, yeah, well, it's back on. And then the short sellers had to get out and the buyer said, oh, see, it's on. Or maybe it was just, you know, putting people on the wrong heel. Who knows? Bottom line is, and whatever it is, it helped markets last week. Or then again, maybe last week was all about the shock of this, of the, what do we even call it? The incredibly quick and fast spread of COVID in the White House. And then the incredible recovery of President Trump. I mean, pretty amazing how fast that came about and was there and then seemed to have resolved. In fact, President Trump on, day three of his illness said that with these steroids and these other drugs that he have, he felt better than he's felt in 20 years. Which is good, right? In a way. Perhaps even the uptick in new cases that we're seeing in certain areas in the Midwest and the kind of uptick slight in hospitalizations, deaths holding about the same, unfortunately. But maybe this is saying that there's something to be said about the potential for some of the therapies that are being right now worked up by a variety of different companies. So maybe they're going to ease the symptoms, which is great news and a major step in the right direction. There's no question about that. And if that's the case, then there's kind of some good news here. Now, obviously, the therapies that President Trump got were for emergency use only, and they're not fully out there, FDA approved, and the average person is not going to get the same kind of care that President Trump got with being helicoptered to the hospital to have a team and a whole floor of his own with a whole team, experimental drugs, and all of the things that go along with that. But nonetheless, the hope right now, and I think this is reasonable, is that, you know what? There is a brighter horizon here. We're starting to see that there are some things that work, whether it's the cocktail that was given to him, whether it was the therapy, whether it was the steroid, whether it was the care, whatever, maybe all of it together, whatever it is, it's kind of an end in sight for this whole thing, even though we're starting to see that places around the world are picking up and we're starting to see that the caseload is starting, or the new infection rate, whatever you want to call it, is starting to pick up as well in the U.S. So I think that's kind of important. I think that was something also that had an impact on the market, even though, again, markets were down at first when they heard that President Trump and a variety of other people in the White House were now positive for COVID-19. And then right away, you know, things got looking a little bit better as he was getting better. And then I think that expanded the idea of not only a cheer that, hey, you know what? Things are good for the president. But I think there was a read-through of maybe some of these drugs that they used, and so publicly, are actually effective. So we have to wait kind of through the cycle, which is a few more days from the end of last week, to see, to make sure that everything's in the clear and that there's no more infection, there's no more, nothing else that will cause him problems with either the drug or, in fact, the illness itself. So that's basically, we have good news on the COVID front. Then you have to wonder, okay, if there's that much good news, do we really need this stimulus? I mean, some people are talking about, hey, you know what? We don't need all this stimulus. But we are in the final innings of an election cycle. We're talking about, 3 weeks until we actually have the election. And this is the time when it does pay to, dare I say, buy your votes. So then whatever it's going to take into the election is probably going to happen. And the negotiations are going to be held up by the Democrats looking for that $2.2 trillion. And I would think, and I'd venture to say, the closer that we get, the more they'll be, okay, let's just get this done and let's just agree to this. And even if we can't do it because we have the Supreme Court nomination process and the approval process going through starting this week coming up, that maybe somehow we'll figure a way just to everybody just agree and get this done somehow. But what about that election? What about the polls? There's a lot of ways to look at this whole thing and through the not necessarily about, okay, the political implications of any of this, but what about investing? And what about the idea of how this is actually going to play out? And more importantly, what we should do with our portfolios. I'm going to talk about that. But before we do, I want to talk about Masterworks. Because did you know that, this is amazing, about 1% of day traders actually turn a profit. You know, obviously there's some people that work on the area of day trading and they kind of get into it and then just say, forget it, because you know what? It's hard work. So why are so many people mistakenly kind of just going out there and buying a stock from the TV and think that's serious investing? Because you can't control the markets. We know that. We talk about that all the time. But you can control your risks. So the question is, how do billionaire investors control their risk? Well, one of the ways is they invest in blue chip art. Now, that sounds kind of unusual to you. You're not alone, okay? But the ultra wealthy have been investing in art for centuries. From 2000 to 2018, the numbers show that art outperformed the S&P by 180%. Just a few years ago, a single work of art sold for $450 million. Can you imagine that? Now, being able to invest in the very same paintings as millionaires and billionaires at a fraction of the cost is something that's available. Masterworks.io. It's an exclusive platform that makes it easy as trading stocks online. And the best part? You don't need to know anything about art because the experts at Masterworks will create a custom portfolio to meet your investment needs. With Masterworks.io, you don't have to choose between big risks and big returns. So what you could do is you could sign up today. What you do is go over to Masterworks.io, use the promo code TDI, and you can skip the 25,000-person waiting list that's trying to get first dibs on all this. Again, that's Masterworks.io, promo code TDI. See important information at Masterworks.io/disclaimer. Now, we were talking about the election and the polls, right? Both of which, the idea of looking at, you know, the polls and the pundits out there that are kind of handicapping who's going to win, what it's going to look like, how to set things up, you know, both of which are usually wrong most of the time, right? Both the polls and the pundits. So a lot of questions are popping up about this whole idea about, you know, what about the election and the impact on markets? And I think it's kind of interesting that we're seeing a few names and sectors pop up that are being picked up in passing during the campaign, during the debates. For example, if you watch the Democratic the vice presidential debate, you had obviously a discussion about some of the things that they were going to put in there and some of the things that we'll continue with. And one of the things we saw from the Democratic contender, Kamala Harris, was that she mentioned for a split second, just for a moment, just in passing, about the idea of federally decriminalizing certain marijuana and making it available. And who knows exactly what that means? Is it going to be fully recreational? Is it going to be state-based? Is it going to be federal? Again, it was just this passing commentary. And what happened? Gave a major lift to the sector during the week after that comment. Kind of interesting. I don't think it's the best idea really to go and start looking at exactly what is said during the campaign and what is being promised, because a lot of times that doesn't carry over. Now, some of it does. But the other question is, if it does, is it going to happen immediately? Is it going to happen in the way they discussed it? Is it going to happen in the size and the scope that's being kind of talked about? And when is it going to happen along the way over the next 4 years? So when you have these casual comments that are coming from one candidate or another, or maybe even an ad somewhere, or you see it somewhere, I don't know, anywhere online, I think you kind of have to jot it down, you know, and put it on the side as, oh, okay, we know this is part of the platform campaign promise that's being made, but is it really something that's going to play out? Because if it was, we'd have to start thinking about right now the whole idea of where we are in respect to the polls. And as we are here right now, and as we are looking at it at this moment, second week of October 2020, Vice President Biden has a commanding lead pretty much on the national averages, depending on how you want to look at it. But again, those are polls. And polls, not the best thing to look at to try to figure out where to put your money at any given time. So therefore, if we're looking at these casual comments from one candidate or the other, we're saying, well, if we take that comment and we take that plan and we look at the polls and we think they're going to win, then we're going to set our portfolio up for that. And then all of a sudden, the election comes, the election goes, and the exact opposite happens. Not good, right? Not good for your portfolio. Now, you can always undo it. But what I'm trying, I think it's important at this point right now, as we are at the 3 week junction of when we are going to get, hopefully there's not a contested election, it doesn't go on for months after that, but let's just for the moment let's say that we'll have an election, we'll have a winner right after the election, we'll know what's going on, right? Well, we have this kind of situation going on right now. I think what we want to do is to be smart about it. Consider moves that may be beneficial depending on who wins. So while we have one looking better than the other right now, okay, let's kind of consider that. Let's say that Biden does win, and one of the things that he talked about in many of his campaign promises is the idea to increase taxes on corporations, right? Moving it back and rolling back the rollbacks. And, you know, the whole Green Deal and the Paris Accord and the, you know, everything maybe is going to be better for solar and wind and for EVs. And okay, put that over on the side. That may be something that happens. But you would think if the polls were kind of even close right now, that you would have a situation where the markets would be reacting, but they're not. They're not reacting. And one of the reasons is that even though if there is a win by Biden, the fact is that we still are required, seemingly, going to have more stimulus. And the idea of increasing taxes right away doesn't make a lot of sense. And who knows, even if we are going to get a tax increase, if it's going to pass through all the various, you know, places it needs to pass to become a law. So right now, really, what I want you to do is I want you to think of all the different things that may be good and bad on one side or the other. If we see a re-election of President Trump, or we see an election of Vice President Biden into the White House, and forget about the contested election, all that good stuff. I'm talking about final answer here, right? The final answer. If on one hand, President Trump is reelected, what does that mean to various sectors in the markets? And what does it mean for companies? And on the other hand, if he doesn't win and Biden is elected, okay, then what does that mean? Do we have more, fossil fuels are really going to be more of a problem than they are already? And we're going to see that there's going to be a rekindling of the idea of marijuana being federally decriminalized. And we're going to see that there's going to be the Green Deal going to come back. We're going to see hiking. All these things. And then what do I want you to do with that? Nothing. Nothing. Because I think it's important to right now play the game. Play the game of the what if. The what if game. And when we are starting to really plan and put this all together, there's a lot of things we don't know how they're going to play out. Again, this realization that we're going to have stimulus first, no matter what happens and who wins, and if then there'll be a tax hike later, again, that's what markets are telling us right now. And what we're telling our clients right now is the same thing. Right now, until proven otherwise, we stay the course. And what course is that? Well, it's the one that we've talked about for months now. One that has many sides of the same discussion covered. We don't want to be on all of one side or another right now, right? We want balance, especially now. For example, what would be a good example? Into an election. Great example. Do we want to be long, super long, or short, or overly bullish or bearish on the U.S. dollar. That could be impacted dramatically in the election. Or do we want to be overly bullish or bearish on, let's just call it, core equities of the U.S. or in the emerging markets or in the developed international markets? Do we want to be underweight or overweight commodities? Right now is kind of a time where I think a substantial amount of neutrality, just neutral, makes a lot of sense. Because we don't know how things are going to play out. If we start working on this what-if game and you're wrong on the end of it, it could be disastrous. So being in balance and having all sides covered may seem kind of like, you know, playing a little bit of chicken right now in terms of not chicken like you're waiting for the car to come and you're going to leave at the last second. I'm talking about chicken as in I'm chicken. I'm not doing anything crazy right now. Like, you know, in other words, I'm not going to go out and purposefully do something that seems to be one side of the win or the other. So right now is a good time to get your ideas in order. But that also doesn't mean, that doesn't mean doing nothing. It means taking time to set up. Because when and if the change comes, there may be some real opportunities that present themselves and it'll be quick. That's not the time you want to start thinking about, oh, well, what would this mean if this happens? You want to set that up in advance. You want to be able to have a game plan. I talk about this all the time. I know some of you are like, oh, here he goes with the game plan again. But, you know, you have to have the game plan. And that game plan you can reference and say, you know, I made the list. I made the pros and cons if President Trump is elected. I made pros and cons if Biden's elected. And how am I going to play that now? And one of the areas we're watching, for example, right now and making that kind of a both-sided discussion is the financials. I think we'd all can agree that, well, generally the banks have been a disaster. I mean, there's nothing good to say about the banks this year, right? We've had all sorts of problems with the banks. However, just recently they started to perk up. And why? Well, we see that yields on the 10-year and on bonds in general are starting to pick up very slowly. They're not too far away from the bottom. I mean, when we consider where we are right now, the 10-year is at the highest yield since it's been since when? June, right? Still ridiculously low. I mean, consider the fact that we started the year at 1.85% on the 10-year, and right now we're at, what, 0.77? It's not like, oh my gosh, yields are flying. No. But that's still up from the August low of 0.5%, which was the same reaction low that we saw back in March when things were just falling apart. So we have banks starting to report next week. And there's a few things we want to look at. Number one, obviously, as yields are coming up, the yield curve gets a little bit more beneficial for the net interest margins, and that's good. Okay, great. But I really think that the important thing as we talk about some of the issues related to the loans outstanding that they have and the potential for loan loss provisions. I mean, we have companies like Citi and U.S. Bank Corp and Goldman, Bank of America, Morgan Stanley. They're all reporting next week. We should get a pretty good read-through on what's going on, right? Good insights as to what's happening. We're going to have updates on these loan loss provisions. That's going to be good. They're going to be telling us what the banks are really thinking, what they're thinking about the environment for many of the businesses that they service. They're going to tell us whether or not they see a stabilization in the economy from a business perspective, not just an economic perspective. Because what we've seen so far is I would say a little bit of a, well, some of the bad news is being covered by the stimulus that we've seen come in, particularly from the Fed, where they're loaning money at very low rates to small businesses. When I say small businesses, I don't mean super, well, they've given the PPP to small business, but I'm talking about small caps, you know, businesses under a couple of billion dollars. $5 billion of market cap. So, you know, we have these zombies, right? These mid and small cap companies that have this massive debt overhang and not enough earnings to cover their debt. I mean, this is a big part of the small cap universe right now, the Russell 2000. But the good news is that they're able to tap these funds. They're able to go out and actually find funds available under normal condition. Well, not normal. Under the abnormal conditions that we have now, usually we would think that many of these companies would be find it very, very difficult to get funds, because who in their right mind is going to be lending money to a company that already is having problems, already has too much debt, doesn't have the ability to cover their debt service? But lo and behold, we have the Fed that is buying corporate debt and therefore holding up the ratings and providing a very nice safety net. All it's doing is prolonging their eventual failure. We know that. And then utilizing taxpayer dollars to do this. You know, this is the old pile of dog poo that's covered with a very generous coating of chocolate syrup. So when you look at it, it's like, well, that looks like a pretty nice ice cream sundae over there. You know, look, hey, chocolate covering, maybe even a cherry on top and a little bit of whipped cream. But let me tell you something, folks. You start looking at those financials, it's like biting into that pile. Not tasty. And that's what we're seeing right now in terms of where we are in respect to many of these companies that are unable to support themselves, but also continually getting bailed out. And this is what we're going to find out. These loan loss provisions that we'll hear from with the banks next week are going to be a key issue, because we already know that pretty much banks put hundreds of billions in total away for this already. The question is, are things getting better? And do they have a brighter outlook on many of these companies? That's going to be a real key to what's going on with the baseline economy from a true business perspective moving into the next several quarters. Assuming there's no longer any shutdowns. Assuming we see that the world kind of continues to slowly but surely heal. If we don't see a major second wave that just debilitates the entire world again, it's really important to watch what's going on. It's really important to see the banks, how they're going to play this, and what their outlook is going to be on where they have. And I would venture to say that some of the banks are probably going to pull back and say, you know what, we overestimated on some of these areas. That would be a really good sign. But if they don't, for whatever reason, and we see they continue to add to their loan loss provisions, I think that's going to be do a couple of things. Number one, it's going to spook investors a little bit, but I think it's also going to push the idea of getting the stimulus out in a much faster way, because there's a realization that, hey, man, you know what? We can't have this economy grow if we don't have this next push, whether it's $1 trillion or, you know, $1.5 or $2 trillion. There needs to be money that's pushed into these companies right now. Unfortunately, that's where we are. Now, many people would say, you know what, let them fail. I'm of the pure capitalistic style as well, but I think that this is a little bit of a different circumstance out of the hands of what they did. Now, you may say, well, Andrew, what are you talking about, Andrew? These companies weren't running well beforehand, and this was just a thing to clear it out. I'm not going to disagree with you there. There will be bankruptcies, and you'll notice that a lot of these are prolonged. In fact, I think we've had less bankruptcies in 2020, and the perspective of where we're going to be if you really take this and push this out of the last 3 months of the year, we will have less bankruptcies in 2020 than in 2019, 2018. How is that possible? Sounds crazy. So really, this is the story. I know we're thinking about the election. All the comments right now that are coming in that you see that, okay, if Biden gets elected, there's going to be a crash or concern over this sector or that, or the hype about stimulus, or right now is the time that we need to, you know, be able to. No, now is the time not for panic. Now is the time for getting everything ready to make that decision when we have full and clear information about what it is that is the result of this election. Not necessarily jumping the gun and looking at the polls or believing what we see in the nightly news. No. Because I've talked to a lot of people who are worried and waiting to invest until after the election. But wow, that makes kind of sense. Why even bother getting involved in any of this if you've been out of the market for some time as it is? But you know what? What if you don't get it right again? Remember, and I'm not suggesting and I'm not telling you that I'm all so bullish. I'm bullish on the idea of investing in a balanced and diversified portfolio. Am I necessarily bullish on equities? No. Am I necessarily bullish on bonds? No. That's not what I'm talking about. I am bullish on a balanced portfolio, on investing for the long haul for you. And I think a lot of people have missed out because they did things like, hey, you know what? If Trump gets elected back in 2016, I am out. It's going to crash the markets. That's it. And look at what happened. Or, you know what? This whole pandemic thing is going to be an absolute disaster. Never thinking about what if there was $3 to $7 trillion pumped into the U.S. markets right after the fact. And how is that going to play out? So we don't know all of the dynamics of how things are going to play out right away. Because we can make a list. We can make a whole list about the 401k plan with Biden and what's going to happen with Social Security and push it back and push it forward and what's going to happen with the rollbacks and the roll-ups and the rollouts and all that and what's going to happen with taxes. And we can make probably a case for Trump. You know, there'll be this kind of civil unrest potentially, and we're going to have this go on, and we may have the taxes, but it's going to break the back of our economy because of all the debt. You know, again, we could go on and on possibly with all these different pro and con scenarios. But then again, the election can favor the markets. Then what? You're out. You decide you don't want to do it because all these different things that are running through your mind, and just what happens then. So let's just stay calm. Let's just stay on plan. Let's keep an eye on the changes once they happen and then adjust. Again, this doesn't mean do nothing now. Now is prep time. So let's use the time wisely. All right, let's see what I got. I got one more thing I want to talk about. Let's talk about the economics for next week because there's a lot happening next week. A lot of earnings that are going to be hitting the tape throughout the entire week, starting on Tuesday primarily. And then we got a lot of things that are happening in terms of economics. And some of these are kind of interesting, because we have CPI coming up on Tuesday. We have an important measure of inflation, which looks to be kind of tampered down. Last period, we're at a 0.4% on a month over month on the headline, which is almost close to a 4.8 to 5% annualized. But again, just the 1 month. And we said, you know what, let's kind of wait to see if there's a trend. Estimates right now are for a 0.2, right in line. Okay, so down from where it was. Wednesday, what do we have? We have PPI, we have core PPI, we have MBI mortgage application interest, and we have the Fed Beige Book, which will tell us about all the regions around the country. Thursday, we have the Philly Fed Index. We have import and export prices. We have initial claims, continuing claims. This is going to be interesting because right now the initial claims we saw last week was about, 840,000? Kind of stubbornly over this 800,000 level of initial claims. Yet we did see that there was some drop of the unemployment rate, the official unemployment rate. And a lot of that had to do with some of the way the statistics are calculated. We're not going to go into all that right now. But basically, we're at a much worse unemployment level than 8%, 7.9%. Friday, we have retail sales coming in. Looks like there's going to be a plus 0.8%. Last period was plus 6%. And that's a good number. We don't usually see those numbers, retail sales. We'll see if that's continuing because we did see some uptick of consumer confidence lately. We have the October that came in at about 80 on the University of Michigan, and we're going to get an update on that. There's an expectation that's going to get bumped up a little bit. We're also going to see the NAHB Housing Market Index, which has been very high because there's been, a lot of houses sold. The new home sales, particularly the single-family home sales, have been on fire for a while. So lots happening next week in terms of the economic and the calendar for earnings, and we're going to see a lot of back and forth on the stimulus, and we're going to see a lot of election stuff going on here and promises. The calendar is very heavy. It's a very, very, I would say, jam-packed period from now for the next few weeks that you need to be really focusing on the longer term. So again, we talked about this a couple of times, right? Stepping back from the screen, taking a longer view. That's kind of what we got to do right now, particularly right now with all that's going on. I want to thank you for joining me. We're going to wrap it up. As it seems, my studio has no air conditioning at all going on right now and is hot as can be in the studio. So I'm going to make that a wrap for this week. And I'll see you again on Monday for a Q&A, the pop-up webinars that we have. You can get to that and register for that over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And you could also check in with us, of course, next week as we talk with, on Tuesday, John C. Dvorak. We'll have a nice analysis of the VP debate and all the goings-on that's going on. So make sure you do that. 9 o'clock at dhunplugged.com. Thank you so much for joining me, and I am going to see you next week. Take care. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.